You've got to hire people. How do you know what's sitting there in front of you? Training and experience are good measures to base a hiring decision on, but they're not everything. The Merit Systems Protection Board has taken a look at T&E assessments and how effective they are across government. John Ford is a senior research psychologist for the Office of Policy and Valuation at the MSPB, and he was the project leader on the study. Joins us now with more about it. John, good morning.
Good morning.
All right. So what do we mean by assessment of training and experience, and why are you studying it? I mean, what else is there besides training and experience?
Well, what we could also do when we hire someone is give them some kind of a direct assessment of their skill. If we were looking at a job for which writing ability was important, we could have someone sit down and write something for us, and then we could evaluate it. On the other hand, if we're looking at their training and experience, we're looking at things they've done in the past. They tell us that, say, a year or so ago on another job, they wrote something and maybe even let us look at a sample of what they wrote, and we'd have to evaluate their skill level from that. And that raises a number of issues. Did they really write it? How much help did they have? And that sort of thing. And the reason we're looking at it is that assessments of training experience are used widely in the federal government to assess people. Resumes are a very common form of that. And we want to highlight that while there are some advantages to using that, there are some advantages to using more direct assessments as well.
And I can just hear a hiring manager say, but gee, that sounds like a lot more work. Is that true?
It can be a little bit more work. But on the other hand, if you're using assessments of training and experience in the best way, you are doing some verification, not just a resume, but a reference check. So that's a certain amount of work as well.
Okay, and just looking at the summary of the report, you said some of the T&E assessments that are commonly used have poor ability to predict an applicant's future job performance, including years of job experience, number of training classes they've taken, grade point averages, and contents of their resumes. So that's pretty much all of the paperwork you could have on someone.
Yeah, those are some of the pieces of paperwork it's very common to get. And again, some of those are simply lists of things a person has done in the past or the amount of time they spent doing it are not good measures. We all know that it's possible to attend a training class and get a great deal out of it, but it's also possible to simply attend it and not get much out of it. And we hear that someone's been in a training class for a certain amount of time. It's not helpful in knowing what they've learned from it. And again, it's very common to have a resume from someone, and we're not going to stop using those. But if you simply get a resume and believe everything that's listed on it, that's a poor procedure, whereas if you take that and use some sort of verification, then it becomes a good tool to help you know if the person has done what they claim. And I should say, I could imagine listeners out there being a little unhappy hearing that. They've probably spent some time putting their own resumes together and taken some care in doing that. The problem is that for all those people who do that right and fairly and honestly represent their experience, there are also people who exaggerate or out-and-out lie about what they've done in the past. And the fact that it's possible to do that and get away with it if no one checks it sort of makes the resume an unreliable tool and is unfortunate for those people who use it the way it should be used.
And just deviating for a minute from the resume to talk about the transcripts and the grade point averages, it seems like agencies ask applicants, even for more senior positions, to show that. Why is it when somebody might be 20 years out of university?
Well, I think a couple of reasons. One is we're a little more confident in the past that we ought to be. We feel like, well, things happened and there's no changing that, so let's ask about something that is difficult to fake, and it's not true. It is possible for people to fake that. And the other reason, again, is that we're just simply used to using those measures. And so a lot of times when someone's hiring, they think, well, this is what one gets when one hires, and let's make use of it without realizing that one could put together a more direct assessment that can tell you more and give you information that you're more confident in.
Does the efficacy of using training and experience vary depending on the job? I mean, just to make an extreme example, suppose you're the FAA and you're hiring a pilot, because they do have pilots at the FAA. They've got aircraft that go all over the place. And someone says they are qualified for this kind of flight or that kind of flight. You would tend to believe that, wouldn't you? I mean, you wouldn't want to try to climb in a plane with someone who's faking the fact that they're a pilot versus someone who's a policy analyst, where it's more fuzzy.
Well, I think with an occupation like pilot, there are licenses and certifications and those kinds of things involved where someone actually demonstrates their skill. If someone claims that they've flown a plane, the best of all would be to climb in a plane with them and make sure they can. But even if you don't, they're able to point to some tests that they've passed in the recent past that shows that they can do that capably.
Of course, if they can't fly a plane, then it's all kind of moot for both of you.
Well, and then you lose one assessor rather than a whole plane full of people, I suppose, would be the thinking.
We're speaking with John Ford. He's a senior research psychologist at the Merit Systems Protection Board. And returning to the issue of resumes or how people apply for jobs in the federal government now, I assume that the vast majority just needs to get through the computerized, automated, first-level layer and to actually get a real person to be looking, who knows something about the job, to be looking at their qualifications. So when you put it in that perspective, how can somebody apply what advice you're giving us now?
From a point of view of someone who's doing the hiring, it's important to carefully design those checklists that people initially encounter. We call them occupational questionnaires, and it's possible to do that well. If a hiring official sits down and thinks through the key tasks that are important to do on the job and has a questionnaire that asks people how well they do them, that gives them a standardized measure of what can be done that's asked of everyone. And often what you do then is later in the process, you go into greater depth with some of the candidates who have scored well on that. So again, it's a matter of having some kind of verification or backup for the initial questions that you ask.
Now, in the dim, dark past, there was the KSA essays, the knowledge, skills, and abilities, which have been discredited, I think, in a lot of agencies, or at least they were, you know, early 2009 on. It was kind of a push to get rid of them. Were they the same? Did they have the same problem as T&E because they were self-descriptive rather than demonstrative?
Well, we consider them a form of T&E, and they do have some of those problems, with, of course, the additional problem that it takes a lot of time to fill them out, and that's off-putting to some applicants. But again, it's a matter of how much verification is done. There is an assessment for T&E called the accomplishment record, in which you do have an applicant do a fair amount of writing, but you have them focus on one particular episode. Again, we were talking about writing skills. One particular writing project that they've done in which they've demonstrated superior ability, and you would have them describe that at length, like the KSAs, but then you would probe them about that to learn more about it, and you would have a more structured process in which that's evaluated and verified with people who are sure that the applicant has actually done that. And the thing about an accomplishment record is it's fairly good at identifying people who can do things well, but because you put a lot of extra effort into evaluating it and verifying it, it's kind of an expensive assessment to use. So it's appropriately used later in the hiring process when there are a smaller number of applicants that you've narrowed down to.
So basically what you've recommended is in the beginning there should be some sort of questionnaire that directly asks candidates whether they can do the tasks that they would be expected to do. And then as the hiring manager pairs it down to the finalists, they can ask for more writing. What are some other things that you think hiring managers should include in this process that they usually leave out?
Well, I'm going to come back with that to the reference checking. A lot of times reference checking is done too late in the process, and it's not done to enough depth. Again, it's understandable to have it somewhat late in the process because it takes some resources to do it. But if we can improve our reference checking, then we can make sure that the claims of applicants are actually verified. And again, reference checking, like resumes, it's something that people know about and basically know how to do. You have a structured conversation with people who have worked with the applicant. The Merit Systems Protection Board has also done a report on reference checking that we make available to agencies to help them do that more effectively.
But a lot of organizations have a rule, don't you dare answer any questions on a reference check, direct them all to the personnel department, which simply says, yeah, they worked here, and now they don't anymore, and because of legal liability fears. So how can you use a reference check to get some real information?
Well, again, we provide a number of pieces of advice. We're confident that you can legally and effectively do reference checks, and we list some techniques. One of them we call chaining, which means don't just check the official sources, the references that have been provided to you, but ask them, are there other people who've worked with the applicant? And you sort of send out a little bit of a net and widen it a little bit so you get to talk to people who are not just the official sources.
All right, good tips. Thanks so much, John.
Thank you.